The North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association needs your help to shine a light on hospitality industry stars.
Even in these extraordinary times, restaurants and hotels are brimming with outstanding leaders who are raising the bar for excellence in performance, service, and the commitment to the industry. NCRLA's Stars of the Industry event recognizes the brightest stars.
Who do you know that has really made an impression going above and beyond?
After the challenging year we've experienced, it's more important than ever to honor and celebrate those who have persevered and made a difference for their company, their employees, their teammates, and the industry. So nominate a star at ncrla.org/stars.
The deadline to submit a nomination is December 11th.
And save the date for an exciting virtual awards ceremony hosted by yours truly,
Max and Matt of the NCF&B podcast,
on February 16th. Get the details at ncrla.org/stars.
You are listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. Thank you for downloading and subscribing. Coming to you virtually live from high atop the historic Raleigh building in beautiful downtown Raleigh, the NCF&B takes the listener behind the scenes to tell the stories of the people that contribute to the creation of the food and beverage community of North Carolina. And now, the misfits in the dish pit, the faces of the front. They are Max Trujillo and Matthew Weiss.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. I am your co-host, Max Trujillo.
And I am your co-host, Matthew Weiss. And Max, never before have I been this amped to do an intro. But today, we have the meats. That's right. That's right. We have the Senior Director of Operations for Arby's in North Carolina, Mr. Brandon Boggs.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Welcome. Yeah. Such a small world. And our listeners are like, what the heck? How did you get the guy from Arby's
and
to be here?
And why are we talking about Arby's?
Yeah. I don't think, Matt, I even told you this, but Brandon and I became friendly through his casual dining experiences at Y Hill. Still one of the only customers, or guests, I should say, that we have allowed to hold the saber while he sabers a bottle of what I'm getting to know real fast is his favorite drink of choice, a little sparkling wine, and sabered with his family. Yes. I think you celebrated your birthday at Y Hill.
Absolutely.
You've done a lot. And I truly say this, like, my favorite guest that came in, it comes into Y Hill, and As the hospitality continued, we just got to know each other a little bit. Then I found out that Brandon runs 67 locations of Arby's throughout all of North Carolina. I'm like, wait, what? And both you and your wife and your daughter, I take come all in, and you have friends that will come in, and you're just a great person for the restaurant, but also a pretty important person for the food environment of our state. And that's something that we rarely ever speak about, as those big boxes all around all the highways and the byways all throughout North Carolina that people refer to as QSR restaurants or fast food restaurants. That used to be the old term. But why not? This is a very important part of the puzzle that is the food and beverage industry. And so why not have somebody that represents those brands on the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast? So that's why Brandon is here. Let's paint the picture so that our listeners know what your role is, because you don't own Arby's.
Sure.
That's a larger company, which we can get into a moment. But specifically, what is it that you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So like you said, Senior Director for Arby's, and that is for corporate Arby's. So a lot of people ask, like, do you own the restaurants or is it franchise? And no, I work for the corporate side. So I'm responsible for all aspects of operation, from people, performance, and profits for the 67 locations. And we have about 1,100 company restaurants and roughly about 2,300 franchise restaurants.
Wow.
Now, we do have positions that I have held in the past, and maybe we'll get to that later, that do work with the franchise operations. But in my current role, it is 100% company operations.
And so is there any differences? I know you dabble a little bit in West Virginia, but in how the North Carolina stores run versus other states, say?
No, I don't think so. And fortunately for me, there's no like minimum wage differences just in the couple that we have in well, actually, there is a minimum wage difference in West Virginia, but a little bit on the lower end. So typically that's some you know, wages differences and, you know, menu mix and things like that. But we keep that all pretty pretty similar throughout the country. But no, other than that, there's no major differences.
Arby's originally came from, is it Georgia, or is that where your corporate headquarters
are? The home office is there. Boardman, Ohio.
Oh,
is Ohio. Where it originated.
Yep. Is where it's Ohio. Okay.
Yeah,
and
close.
So I used to always think Arby's was clever because everyone knows that, as Matt said before, we got the meats. They're roast beef sandwiches typically. And I always thought, oh, I would tell people, and I was incorrect in this thought. Arby's is not a play on the acronym RB. But it sounds like it. It actually is the initials of the original owners. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Do you know it?
No.
The Raffle Brothers.
The Raffle Brothers. Yeah, there we go.
It's a common mistake, but you would think Arby's, you know, it would be the initials, but it's not.
Hold on. I'm still unclear. So what? It's A and R. B, like B's, like the brother, or what was the
original? No. So I think it just their initials were the Raffle Brothers.
Yeah.
And so I think when you look at those RBs, and then they spelled it out, A-R-B-Y-S.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But then they also just happened to do this delicious thinly sliced roast beef and put on sandwiches. If anyone's been to a Arby's, you know, you get the beef and cheddar, and they always have the sesame or the onion roll bun.
I mean,
it's delicious. I'm such a glutton. I've had Arby's three times in the month of November. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Oh yeah.
You're a dedicated fan. That's legitimate.
Yeah. So we're gonna amp that up by at least 1.5 visits per week.
He might get after this. You just might have lost some street cred though amongst our local chefs.
No way, man. I mean, so that in itself, and we're gonna get it deeper into like business and all that stuff at some point in the show. But let's talk about just Arby's as a business, because when you think of QSR, quick serve restaurants, or fast food, as it was commonly known. By the way, what fast food? I just love that any term that you have at some point outdates itself. Like you can't use it because somebody else decided to call their same thing a different thing, and it just makes it new.
Well, I think that's a really good point, because I still have a distinction between fast food and QSR.
I would think that, yeah, like a Chipotle or a Jimmy John's, let's say, is QSR, whereas like McDonald's is straight up fast food. Right.
Yeah. I mean, like things that are more for takeout and where you don't sit down or you don't have any type of service, or I guess are more fast food versus a quick service casual. You still have like you still see a server, maybe even more than just a cashier. I don't know if there's a
if
hardcore definition, because the lines are definitely
blurred. If only there was a professional in this industry
that
has been working for the companies for so long. Is there a delineation between QSR and fast food?
I wouldn't say there's a delineation between those two, but there is between QSR and fast casual.
Right.
When you brought up the Chipotles of the world, that would be considered fast casual.
Yeah.
And what's the difference? Because
it's almost like no drive-thru window, if that's what you're going to say.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's, you know, written on paper, but I mean, that's the only delineation, you know, you can make.
Yeah, that makes sense. But the one thing like Arby's has done from the beginning is they've prided themselves on not really being a burger joint, but actually they do the – I don't know if – I haven't been inside an Arby's in a long time, but my cousin Mia, she worked at Arby's when she was 16, 35 years ago. And I remember like the big spits that almost look like an old Greek restaurant with the shawarma roasting, and then they thinly slice it and all. Yeah. Is that still the practice?
Yeah. So – some of those thoughts are still there, right? We're trying to recreate those in a much more modern atmosphere. But, you know, what the Raffle Brothers did so long ago, which was quite daring, is, you know, when they came around, they were selling a premium sandwich that was 69 cents, I believe.
Yeah.
Whereas all the burger guys were doing, what, 25-cent burgers? So that was pretty bold back then, right?
Yeah.
And to your point, it was all about, like, theater, right? It was all about the experience and slicing this thinly sliced roast beef sandwich, where I think today we try to, with our kind of maverick spirit, we try to recreate that in a much more modern atmosphere, right? And so it's still a premium product with maybe less of the theatrics.
Sure. But how do you, specifically, how is the roast beef cooked? I mean, obviously it's roasted. Yeah, but, yeah. So, and then just slice like a
sandwich. Yeah, so it's roasted daily for about 3 hours, 3.5 hours. And then we slice every sandwich to order. There is nothing pre-made. So it is a hot roast that sits on a slicer that is manned, you know, the entire day.
That's got to be under the quick service definition, like we slice to order.
Yeah, and not like we take 100 frozen patties and throw them on a
hot that are already cooked. Or,
yeah.
Because also like the burger that you're getting from wherever you might get it, you don't know exactly what's all inside that burger. And, I mean, I don't know.
Like half of it's sawdust, right?
Or like soy.
Or soy, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Taco Bell is pretty much selling you plant-based food at this point because there's very little animal product in it, which maybe that's a good thing for the future in dining. I don't know. But either way, I mean, it is what it is. Like it's roast beef, so it's there. But you guys also made a pivot. A while back when, who was it, when Bloomberg was trying to eliminate all the supersizing and the excessive food, and then, you know, big companies like McDonald's were introducing like salads and trying to do like the healthier side, you decided to throw out like this crazy sandwich program with like really soft bread and lettuce and pickles and tomatoes and like all this like I mean, speaking to your language, Matt, because I know you're a good sandwich guy, like you can get a legit deli-made sandwich at Arby's. This is not a commercial, folks. This is just – I'm a huge personal fan. But I remember like going, I'm like, oh, you can get a sandwich? And then I got like this great sandwich. I'm like, oh, my God, this is cool. And still in a fast food
full disclosure, though, Brandon did hand you a lifetime card for Arby's before we started this podcast.
I wish that was the case. I'm still looking for that card, Brandon.
We'll work something out here.
Yeah. But I like – I mean, so even on like the healthier tip, like it's like, all right, instead of just being this, you know, what you even could perceive as like a greasy cheese and, you know, meat-filled sandwich, you could also do something a little bit fresher. And I've appreciated that Arby's has kind of done their own thing from the beginning. And you just – I don't know. You don't really – throw them in the same category as all these big burger companies. But then when you start looking at your company, which has it, it's not called Arby's any longer. It's a much bigger company. And then more has like developed over the years to where most people that aren't paying attention to the QSR dining realms don't really understand that, like, similar to previous guests we've had on the show, like when we had Wicked Weed on and even Appalachian Mountain Brewing, when they had been purchased by a semi-large company and then a craft brewers association, and then that company was purchased by InBev or Anheuser-Busch to a point where it's like it kind of gets like one big fish gets eaten by another big fish and goes through. There's a lot of ways you can look at that, and you can say, oh, that's just big corporate, you know, corporate America just taking over. But it also does show a company that does well gets to be bought by another company and gets to get the dividends of it and then enhance their service model, 401ks and paid time off and, you know, better benefits and all that because you have a bigger parent company that runs you. And then that parent company is like, yeah, you have a good model, so we can make a lot of money off that. And as we stated before, it's like, it's not like that parent company is like taking money out of the original hands of what the company was doing. They're like, no, we're not happy with the money you're making now. We want to make this a whole lot more money, and we'll take that money. And you'll still be making good money of what you've done originally. So I think, I don't know, it's just a way of like looking at, because it's inevitable and it's happening in all walks of life, that if you come up with a good concept and you truly see it to the end, that is the finish line. I don't see how, unless you're just going to be happy owning your company until the day you die, at some point, even after you die, it's got to go somewhere and someone's got to take that hand off. So when the Raffle Brothers owned it, when did they essentially sell to more of a corporate level? When did that change?
I feel like I should have a timeline in front of me because I could mess this up. But it's let me just answer it a little more broadly. It's changed hands several times over the course of years. It went to a company called RTM at one point, and then we actually even had it was Wendy's Arby's Group. Are you guys familiar with that for a very short period of time? That didn't last too long, and then it's changed hands a couple other times, and then most recently becoming Inspire Brands.
Right.
You know, once the purchase of Buffalo Wild Wings. Billings came into fold, and then, you know, a couple of the other brands, I'm sure.
Well, let's get into that real quick. But before we get into that, let's talk about some of the companies that help us out. And primarily, speaking about the Folks Foundation, which is a 501c3 nonprofit, probably not buying a bunch of other small companies and doing whatever, but they are supporting local companies. In fact, they are the champions of all good things crafted in North Carolina and the folks that make them. So you can find out more by reading their journal, which comes out quarterly online for free at folksfoundation.org. And you can also pick up their actual hard printed Folks Foundation journal on their website. But yeah, so let's talk about Inspire Brands. So Inspire is the company that is now, was once Arby's restaurant group and is now considered Inspire because they were inspired to buy Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, at the time, and I did a little research on this, and so without getting to, like, what is the CNBC guy that, like, goes freaking out about, like, all investments and stocks and all that, that's not this show, and you don't want me giving stock advice, but Inspire Brands became that because they diversified by buying another company that was performing well. That led them to, they brought in an equity company that injected so much money into their company, which the way I read it is that that equity company, Rourke, came in and spent a lot of money to help purchase Buffalo Wild Wings, but in that purchase raised their top line dollars so that all of the partners that are in there, whatever shares they had were smaller shares after the purchase was made, thus making it easier to acquire the partners. I'm getting at the point that through all these acquisitions, Inspire Brands is now a privately owned company, which
Correct.
Is interesting because after that, then shortly after, I believe Wendy's sold their shares only 6 months after Buffalo Wild Wings was acquired. And then a month later, I believe Sonic, the Sonic drive-ins was purchased for $2.3 billion. And then that all just happened in 1 year in 2018.
Right.
So that's all like relatively soon. The following year, Jimmy John's was purchased.
Yep.
So that's a huge thing too. And I don't know, but I've heard speculation that other things are afoot too. So we'll get into that if we ever do.
Sure.
About what Inspire is doing. But Inspire is now, or it's getting to be, one of the largest restaurant companies in America.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is crazy.
It is. I'm humbled to be a part of it because I do believe it kind of started with Arby's. And so it's humbling and exciting to be a part of that transition and growth, right?
Yeah.
And the coolest thing about it is as we've become Inspire, the company continues to just reinvest. And that's really exciting for us in the field. And I think you're able to do that as you grow that portfolio and you're able to make a lot better business decisions and reinvest into all of the brands and companies and make very smart investments that, you know, help everyone all the way to, you know, the team member level. So
yeah.
Very, very neat.
I'm wondering, just to get back to the food aspect of it for a minute. So when you have a company that large, obviously consistency is king, because if you want to go into an Arby's restaurant in North Carolina, or you want to go in Georgia, or you want to go in New York or wherever.
Dubai,
Kuwait, yeah.
Wherever they have them, yeah.
You want to have the same experience. So especially when it comes to North Carolina, you run 67 or you oversee 67
sure.
restaurants. Is what does sourcing look like for that? And especially when you're doing a product that's somewhat craft. I mean, you're cooking the roast beef on hand, you're slicing it to order. So what does the sourcing look like for that beef?
When you is from like a
like
supply chain?
Yeah, supply chain.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Who are you sourcing that from? And is that always the same?
Yeah, yeah. So we use a couple of different companies, but in North Carolina, it's McLean out of Rocky Mount.
So that.
Are you familiar?
We're not, but
okay.
I'm not, but that champions our cause as, you know, using and helping North Carolina. And that's part of the reason why, you know, we're highlighting this is because it's not in our typical scale. You know, we highlight a lot of the local culinary
right.
scene, but to understand this and why big corporations such as Inspire can actually be a friend to the local economy.
Right. Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely.
The other Arby's in your West Virginia or, you know, some of your colleagues that are director of operations for other states, they're not using the same supply. They
no,
have their
not
own
all.
Supply that, chain or
correct,
beef.
But,
yeah.
but McLean's a rather large company, so
okay.
but
yeah.
there's a few more out there as well.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Yes, and McLean has like they have a position in North Carolina, but I imagine they also have spaces outside too.
Yeah.
So it's a national it's a national brand with a branch in North Carolina that, and everything eventually gets sourced by a farm. Everything is farm to table, depending on how far you take the farm aspect of things.
Right.
Things aren't necessarily grown in a petri dish typically. So, yeah, that's not that. I do want to know though, when it comes to, you know, if you watch the founder with Michael Keaton, which is like the Ray A. Kroc of McDonald's story, he realized that he wasn't in the food business at some point. He was in the real estate business. It was like owning all of his properties and then just doing whatever you got to do inside of those properties is kind of like a separate idea. So does Arby's or Inspire, do they own the land of all of the franchises and all? Like, is that part of it?
We do both.
You do both?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And that's a little out of my wheelhouse, but I am certainly aware of that. We have some properties that we own and we have a lot of properties that we lease as well.
So for you, when it goes from 67 to 68 locations, how are you like in that business?
How am I involved?
Yeah.
Yeah. So actually, I would be involved with the real estate team. So it would be pretty much myself, my division vice president and the real estate, you know, that has this territory. We would talk about a property. And so they would get my, just my opinion based on being from here. Right. Mm-hmm. And then my operational opinion. And then they would use their, you know, kind of real estate opinion as well. And we kind of all three put our heads together and determine if we feel like it would be a successful location for us. So, yeah, I mean, I'd say I'm fairly heavily involved in it.
Yeah. Without giving like your trade secrets, what are just general things that you're looking for when you're expanding to a new place? Like, what makes you feel like, oh, this is going to work?
Gosh, you know, I don't know. Well, I can just tell you this. We're looking for an AUV target, right? So we're kind of putting our heads together and going, hey, if this can do such and such volume, we feel like that's a good spot. If we're not confident in that, then clearly no.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would leave it to the real estate guys to say what's the trade secret.
Yeah.
But, you know, from an operational standpoint, you know, basically they're looking for me to kind of almost put a stamp to go, hey, I feel like I can pump out this amount of revenue in this location.
Right.
And here's why, based on A, B, and C.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you know, the CVS downstairs of our building has been blown out from the chaos that ensued. So could you put an Arby's downstairs so we could have one? Just
no, right.
And that three away? Times a month would go to like, what, 15 times by five.
That's so interesting because like that's how much the landscape has changed, right? So locations like you're referring to in our downtown areas, you know, that's shifted quite a bit, right?
Oh, man.
So some of that secret when you're talking real estate now could be, you know, shying away from some of those areas. Right? Because there's less, you know, foot traffic.
Yeah. True, so like right? Downtown, currently speaking, and much to my wife's chagrin, because she loves downtown so much, everything's moving out. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't feel comfortable right now to like build and open and do new things downtown because you're boarding up windows every 3 weeks or so. Yeah. And it just, and also it's expensive. And then you've got tough parking, you know, and all that. We may have to take a break to pay our meters in a little yep. while we're doing this. And so it doesn't make it convenient, whereas you could go 2 miles outside of this place and then you could just kind of have whatever you want.
Rural becomes a little more attractive, right?
Yeah. But that also then leads in, how does that get turned around? If a big company like Arby's or Inspire looks at a downtown area like, no, it's better for us to go to a place that's not developed, build up our own brand and do it 4 miles outside, or go to, you know, Knightdale or Wendell or something like that. It's like those are great places to go because yep. there's already people living there and we can build a place for much cheaper.
Probably. I mean, that's how Raleigh has come to this point, even though in its dormancy now, hopefully with 2021, it'll change. And then, I mean, there is a Subway here, right? So, and that restaurant seems to do pretty well. I mean, it looks busy. So.
There are two Subways within a block of each other, which is the weirdest thing.
Oh, wow.
There's a Subway in the Wells Fargo building, and then there's a Subway just next door to where Garland is on the other side of the block.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that there was one.
Yeah,
so
like some days I want to get a Subway over to the left, and some days I want a Subway over to the right.
And I'm sure they're capturing some market share from some other unfortunate places nearby that,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
couldn't make it, right?
First of all, on a completely non-Arby's note,
sure.
are you related to Wade Boggs at all?
No, I'm not, but an interesting story. Like, so if you're ever telling someone, you know, your last name, right? Like, let's say you're grabbing a tab or something somewhere, and they're like, hey, what's the last name? And you're like, Boggs. They're like, what is it? And I go, Boggs, like Wade. And it's really interesting. It ages people, but people like it. They're like, ah, Gotcha.
Well, right? Yeah. But there's a Brandon Boggs that also played in the Major League Baseball, too.
Like for the Tampa Bay like Rays or
like
something.
More currently. Yeah.
Not nearly, you know, Hall of Fame talent.
Not number three all-time batting champion with like a 352 lifetime career batting average. Not
exactly.
Give or take a couple points.
I don't think you're even close there. He was an over 300 batter, but I don't think 352. I think maybe for one season. Anyway,
right. So okay.
Sorry, Shannon Healy, for talking about.
I throw it around if I need somebody. If they didn't hear the last name clearly,
he's a nephew or he's an uncle.
Yeah.
328, by the way. 328.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
That's solid, man.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Eat chicken before every game.
Miller Lite and chicken.
So, much like Wade Boggs, when he went to the Yankees, he had a career renaissance, you know, and won a title there. Was able to do with, unable to do with the Red Sox. Arby's, for a long time, they seemed, I might use the word dormant, at least in my purview. You didn't hear about them at all. And in the last couple of years, maybe 3-4 years, you've had this renaissance. Obviously, the We Got the Meats campaign has helped, and that, you know, beautiful voice on there. But what has changed? You've been with the company for a long time, but like what seemingly changed?
Yeah, I've been with the company for 14 years, and I would agree. Matter of fact, when I came aboard with Arby's, I didn't even know them that well, right? I'd probably only eaten there a handful of times, and I still think we get some of that. But you're right, that changed. I'd probably stay a little bit further back, maybe even like 6-7 years ago.
Okay.
And forgive me on the timeline, but sure, I think a lot of that came with a marketing campaign. You know, when we got, do you know who's the voice of We Have the Meats? By the way,
it sounds like Ving Rhames, but
it is Ving Rhames. It is Ving Rhames. So, but anyways, you know, I think it's partially some of the marketing campaign and then just some really innovative products, right? And I think that's something that we do very well that sets us apart. You know, we already kind of set ourselves apart with just our core menu.
Yeah.
But then when we have these LTO options that, you know, come, you know, once every 3 months, we just knock them out of the park. And a lot of that started with our smoked brisket sandwich. Okay. Have you had that?
I have had the smoked brisket.
It's awesome. I mean, it's a great sandwich. It's just dynamite. So, you know, I think that just kind of that hit the mark for us years back. And then
diversifying.
Matt, you're a big fan of brisket.
Look at that.
I'm gonna have to try that. That looks really good right now.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is a fantastic. And to think that you can get that at a quick service restaurant,
right?
Like, that's unheard of. And that's where I think we kind of channel that premium product back from the original Raffle Brothers. And we do that very well.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense, but like, somebody had to make that decision, right? Like, oh, we're kind of fledgling, and I don't know what the economics of it, but like, oh, how do we restart our brand? And like, oh, well, let's hire Ving Rhames and we'll come up with this slogan. I mean, I'm just, you know, like, I guess all of that comes in one, right? Maybe, yeah, you say, okay, let's diversify our menu, and then let's get the marketing prowess to get that message out there.
Yeah, and really rely on innovation, right? So you can't just throw out one brisket sandwich and just think you've made it, right?
Yeah.
You know, this is an infinite, you know, industry, right?
Well, so, I mean, the watermelon margarita apparently at White Hill changed the, you know, dynamics of the whole business, economics of that place.
Oh, the retox. We had to say goodbye to it for the holidays. It's you know, you can't get watermelons too much when it gets cold.
It's a seasonal thing.
Yeah.
So, but it'll make, it'll be like, we kidded around. We're like, it'll be like the McRib. It'll come back, not to like talk about McDonald's in an Arby's episode.
Right, yeah.
How dare I? But
we do that for a reason, right? So when you know people like something or love something and you know they like it or love it at a certain time of year, you know, if you leave it on the menu all the time, it runs its course, right?
Yeah.
So when
but how does that change you, especially if it's a director of operations? Let's say you have your seasonal sandwich. I don't know what it is. It may be the smoked brisket.
So like fish.
You have a fish.
Yeah, we do a fish sandwich.
So what if you're killing it with it, right? Now you're a senior director of operations and corporate comes to tell you, all right, time to get rid of the fish. And you're like, but man, I need the fish sandwich to make my numbers. So how does that go? Do you have autonomy to say, hey, we're keeping the fish on right now?
No, I wish. I could say, yeah. Hey, we work closely with our marketing team and as a large corporation, put a lot of trust in what they're doing.
Okay.
And the cool thing is the fish does phenomenal for us every year, but we've become so good at innovative products that I'm extremely confident that we have something great right around the corner, right? That hits national TV and we knock another one out of the park. And then you build that excitement and people are ready to come back for fish when it hits again.
Well, speaking just speaking to, about the retox at Y Hill. That was the thing. And Chris and I, we talked about it. The bartenders were...
What do you mean the retox?
Oh, that's the name of the watermelon cocktail.
Oh, the retox.
The retox. And it's delicious. It's a great drink. But the bartenders were totally over making it because they've made like 4,000 of them in just the last few months. And that's not hyperbole. That's probably accurate. And they're just like, dude. And then as Chris and I were saying, more from like the management ownership side of it, it's like, oh, you're tired of making the thing that brings people in here every day and like is our top performing selling item. It's like, yeah, go pound sand, man. Like, go, like this is what we're making because this is what keeps the lights on. But then at Mother Nature has its way of saying like, well, seasonally, you can't make that watermelon thing once the frost hits the land. And so the watermelons aren't going to come. And because ethically, we want to source those watermelons as close to North Carolina as possible. It ends up being, yes, could we buy some from Mexico and bring them up? Possibly. We may have even experimented with some of those, but they were crap. They did not taste good. They were mealy and nasty, and they just were not as plentiful. And so, like, the drink wasn't as good. So we just said, screw it. We have to move on. But you don't change if you can when it performs well. You just keep pushing the gas because it's not like you're being greedy. You're giving the customer what they want if that's the thing they're ordering. If that's the it had been until the last day it was on the menu, the number one performing cocktail on the program. I mean, in our program.
This is a perfect conversation for somebody actually that I wanted to get into, and I've been thinking about a lot lately. Brandon, you might know that I'm in the wine business as I mean, amazingly enough, as you know, star podcasters, we're still not. We're putting all of our money in the equity of the business.
So
We're not living on
That's
the fat of the land.
Chairs still squeaks.
But I've noticed, and as a trained wine professional sommelier, like we always try to get people to drink seasonally, you know, and that's important. But up until recently, it really wasn't a thing. You know, like people go to a restaurant. It's 90 degrees in the summer. Give me my big cab. You know, like you're drinking. It's 90 degrees out, sir. I don't care. You know, like obviously you don't say that, but you're thinking that. However, I've noticed just in sales, people when the weather gets warm, they drink rosé, and then it gets a little cooler, and they might go to some heartier whites, and then they go to, like, it's really a thing now where people are drinking with the seasons, right. And does that translate at all to QSR or to fast food?
Yeah, I think so, but more what I'm hearing when you say that is just, I think it's the natural tendency of, like, humans, like, status quo bias, right?
Yeah.
Like, they kind of stick with what they're used to when they're used to it, right?
Yeah.
So, I think it's more, I feel like we almost drive them, right? Because we put out our LTO products at certain times, right? So I feel like it's us making this decision less than them. Does that make sense, right?
Yeah.
Like, so if we throw out fish, they know when it's coming,
right?
And they kind of come for it, right?
It's like a restaurant in the summertime, they're going to have two rosés by the glass or three rosés, and then that helps people make the decision. Yeah. That makes sense.
So I think you're like influencing them to for their decision making in a sense.
Also, that's a microcosm there because people are physically sitting outside, so that might change their
maybe that's the real analysis that we're discovering from COVID and from dining, is that right now everyone's dining outdoors, so you are dining in the climate, you're dining with the season more than in a controlled environment with air conditioning and all inside, so the weather dictates the way you're going to eat.
Yeah. But because you're in the elements.
Yeah, you're drinking for what you want because people are dining in the elements.
Silver lining of COVID. We have finally got more seasonal because we're dining in the elements.
Yeah.
But in reference to drive-thrus, you're at the mercy of the temperature of your car, right? So
exactly. So I'm still getting that cold ruby red Mountain Dew.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, thank you. This is my next question. Okay.
Oh, Mountain Dew.
No, not Mountain Dew, but beverage. We are a food and beverage show. And why don't any of these places sell beer? Is it just not cost effective to get a beer and wine license? Or is it a family?
Funny you should mention that because Arby's has Mexican locations that just opened up with
very
beer.
Recent news. Correct. Yeah, absolutely. We don't think that's coming here anytime soon, but that is very new news. That's a good question. I'm, to be honest with you, I'm not even sure the answer of that, but maybe it's not cost effective. And
especially nowadays, like you have the Shake Shacks of the world that have like wines in cans or wines on tap, you know, like. I want a big glass of red wine with my
but you got to think even now, the way the landscape's changed with due to COVID is, you know, the dine-in is minimal. It's what, 10%, 8 to 10%?
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying, canned wine.
Yeah.
But see, Taco Bell experimented with that, right? With the Taco Bell cantinas.
Yeah, I believe they did do that.
They have one here next to NC State where you can go in and, you know, that's obviously they're in a college town where I don't need to tell you that college kids like to drink alcohol.
Taco and a beer.
But they have, they have their tacos and their burritos, and they have local beers. I mean, you can get a decent local beer on tap. I don't have the stats, but if it was super successful, I'm sure we'd be seeing a lot more of them. And they're very far and few between to see a QSR place with a heavy alcohol background. And I wonder if that is just Pavlovian's response to when you have a burger, you want a Coke. And when you have a taco, you want Mountain Dew.
Or is that because Pepsi owns Taco Bell and maybe they want them to drink more Pepsi?
Well, that's probably it too, but I'm sure Pepsi owns some brewery somewhere.
There's got to be a little influence in just the dine-in experience, right? So it's either fast food or quick service. So you don't have a beer quick, typically, right? Or fast, you know? So that's probably a lot of it. That's just kind of planted in your head too, right? So at quick service, hey, I'm here to get a quick meal.
Yeah, I'll buy that. Yeah. But this is a great time to mention that if you do want a quick glass of wine, or maybe you grabbed Arby's or a quick service casual and you need some wine or beer to go with it, guess where you can get it? Triangle Wine Company. And they have four locations and soon to be a fifth. So they're in Holly Springs. They have their flagship out in Cary in the Waverly Place location next to Whole Foods. And then they are also in Morrisville and way out in Southern Pines if you go out there for a golf trip. But also they are coming to the New Bedford area.
Yeah, North Raleigh, my hood.
Yeah,
so go to trianglewineco.com and use the NCFB promo code when you are purchasing your products, and you can save a little discount because of us. And you can say thank you, Max and Matt, and we'll say you're welcome.
And we prefer handwritten notes sent to the studio.
Yes.
And my wife would endorse that because we frequent the one at Waverly Place. So
nice.
It's a nice place.
Excellent.
Yeah. It's a really cool spot.
Very, very, very much so.
And good people that run it, too.
Yeah. So let's get back to you. And you brought up your wife and all. You're good people. Tell us a little bit about yourself and where you would kind of come up, and how does one kind of, like, you never really hear the story of how someone kind of comes up through the corporate side of a big food company such as yourself.
Yeah, no, enjoy talking about that. Not because I enjoy talking about myself, but I hope to kind of change that thought process for some, because typically speaking, those of us in the restaurant industry didn't grow up or at a young age go, you know what, I'm gonna manage an Arby's, or I'm gonna run a Y Hill. Like we typically don't think that at a younger age. It's something we just kind of
Wade Boggs, not Brandon Boggs.
Exactly, right? Yeah. Used to, but now I'm kind of proud of being Brandon Boggs here.
Yeah.
But no, it's not something that you just like set a goal for typically, right? Especially the route if you want to use like fast food or quick service. So, hey, I started out just like a lot of people did. I started in a dish room, right? I was 16 years old. I started washing dishes. And I've always had a strong work ethic and I worked hard. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with this, but the day that they came up to me and said, hey, would you like to start making pizzas and salads? I was like, absolutely. Yeah, I think that was the biggest promotion I ever had in my career to this day,
What was the place?
You may be familiar with it. It's a place called the Village Tavern in Greensboro.
Yeah, the Village Tavern.
Yeah, that was my first job in a wonderful restaurant that's still around.
Yeah.
But man, I busted my butt there through high school. I worked very hard there. But yeah, started out dishwasher, got promoted to the line, right? Like that's a big deal for anybody that understands that.
Oh, yeah.
And then I got promoted to like fry, right? And then grill. And so like the further you go down the line, that's like a big deal when you're like 18 years old, right?
Oh yeah. I have to interject for a second.
Sure.
Coming to America was on Sunday Night
great
Movies.
Movie.
Like who watches Sunday Night Movies? But it just happened to be on their commercials. And that great line by Louis Anderson, if you remember, like he said, "Oh, first I'm mopping the floors, then in 2 months I get to be the fry guy, and then I get to be the burger guy flipping burgers, and then 2 years later you start rolling in the big bucks, assistant manager."
It's like I feel like that's about what I'm about to explain, right? That's my life. Yeah. So anyways, I ran off to Wilmington and I just got a job like waiting tables at Applebee's. And I was just kind of a young knucklehead, right? You know, I was young. I was going to community college and waiting tables, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I was just always had a hard work ethic, right? And it's kind of like movies too, but like the manager kept coming up to me and like, hey, you should go into management, right?
Yeah.
You know, and in my head, I'm like, I don't think you want me to go in. Exactly. And so I kind of just brushed that off. And then he kept pushing, right? And then one day he sat down and talked to me about salary and benefits and stuff. And something in my gut said, hey, hop aboard, right? Yeah. So I became an assistant manager with Applebee's and moved to Raleigh and did that for a bit. Moved back to Wilmington and became an assistant general manager. So I got promoted pretty quickly and I was excited. I was still quite young. So I'll try to speed this up, but one day a recruiter called me and I was an assistant GM at Applebee's. And a recruiter called me and it was for Arby's. And like I said, I wasn't that familiar with them. And mind you, you know, fast food, maybe even so today, but especially back then, it's kind of taboo, right? Yeah. Like it's like, so I remember coming home to my wife and going, hey, a recruiter called me for Arby's. And she literally was like, why would you do that? Why would you, yeah. like you're an assistant GM at Applebee's and why would you go work for Arby's?
It sounds counterintuitive. It sounds like you're going backwards.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I hope to change that for people, maybe not just on this podcast, but yeah. And that's kind of how I lead. Right. Cause I want to change that for people. But, anyway, so I we were young, married couple. So we kind of bickered about that. And I said, look, I'm going to interview with them. And, something in my gut said this was the right move for me. And if I had my wife sitting beside me right now, she would probably hop on the mic and say, best move we ever made.
Yeah.
So really neat. And I came aboard as assistant manager 14 years ago. And you mentioned, you know, good people. And that's kind of what Arby's is about, right? So, you know, everything I'm sitting here telling you now, it's not scripted, right? Like it just comes from a genuine, sincere place through great experience. So I started as assistant manager and I was very fortunate enough to reach the next level, you know, roughly about every 2.5 years. So became a general manager and then a certified training manager and then an area supervisor. And then I took a position called a business consultant, which works with the franchise operations. And you literally, you help consult with the franchise organization. And then to my recent role of director of operations. And, you know, it's interesting, like, it's not the model that I was going for, but once I got my foot in the door and started to understand it and how to leverage it, I try to teach people that it's okay. You know what I mean? Like it's certainly okay.
Because the stigma of it and like sitting, you know, we didn't have it this year, but sitting at Thanksgiving dinner and be like, what do you do? Oh, I'm a assistant manager at Arby's. Like that has a stigma, you know?
Yeah.
And, but you're a guy that's like, screw that. I'm going to take pride in what I do and make it work.
Sure. I was just having a conversation with somebody about this. One of our more local independent QSR locations was saying that they hired somebody from a nationally known chain place. And I'm being vague, so just be, you know, for whatever reason. But they hired somebody that was like a general manager of like one of the notable fast food locations to run this independent place. And he said basically the wheels came off. The guy couldn't do it because in the industry of QSR, fast food, or just say like, you know, McDonald's or Arby's or Burger King, wherever, if you're good in that company, they're going to promote you. They're going to keep you going. Like there is a big difference between the person that works in the company to the one that's like just getting by. And those that just get by get kind of pushed aside and then they go back out into like the civilian life and they figure it out somewhere. That's why I'm no longer in the corporate industry. I'm not a guy that fits well in that cog. I can't do it the same way. And it's like, I need to be that independent free speaker and do my thing. And hopefully I'll develop a brand that somebody else will then purchase and then there'll be 67 locations out there.
I disagree. I could see you in the thriving in that corporate world, like being the fry guy at McDonald's, be like, no, those fries are not the way we do it here. And being like super militant about how the fries are supposed to come out and like how you've been taught.
I did work in a corporate company. You know, I worked for Southern, which is now Southern Glazers, for 4 years. And I also worked for the Jackson Family Wine for 4 years. And there were always better salesmen. I mean, I would have my moments. Like I was like, I think I was salesman of the year once. And so like, that was cool.
That's a pretty big deal.
So I was up there at one point and I, you know, got to go to Italy a few times for some great sales things, achievements. But when you look at the large scope, you know, talk to my old director of operations that basically looked at me and said, you will never be a manager here. And I went, oh, okay. And like, basically put the kibosh on me. I'm like, well, then I guess I'm quitting because you just put a ceiling over what I'm going to do. And then the best part was I quit, and then he was let go about a month later.
And the other thing is, as a manager, you were probably making more money if you were a good salesman anyway. But that's eventually the entrepreneurial spirit, which I think is relevant to our conversation, of why you did it. But the other part of the corporate world benefits is, I remember, and by the way, this brings me back to, I think, episode 6 or 7 with Chef Scott James of the Angus Barn,
Chris Santucci,
and Chris Santucci, when they talked about hiring people. By the way, this is our 4-year anniversary release date. So, congratulations to Max and I.
Happy 4 years!
Congrats. Yeah, that's amazing.
December 1st was the first year in 2016 that we put out a show. We had started recording in like August
October,
and then we did released. 6 of them and said,
"That's awesome."
Send them out.
Yeah, on High Trans' birthday. Happy birthday!
You should celebrate at the Angus Barn or Arby's.
On our podcast dollar, we might go get an Arby's sandwich.
Now that you have
your lifetime card.
Yeah.
Okay, but back to the point I was trying to make is that I remember Chris Santucci and Scott James telling us about having problems hiring, and they did hire some people out of Bonefish Grill, and people think, oh, Bonefish, that's big corporate, like, you know, restaurant. But those people were very diligent in how they did, and because they were corporately trained, so that was a really positive influence on the rest of their staff.
Which is interesting. So that's like the two sides of that coin, right? Because what I was saying was the guy that was the general manager that probably didn't continue to work for one of those big chains was maybe not the maybe he got to the point of being general manager because he was good at some of the other tasks and got up there and then just didn't have what it took. So then he wasn't there. But as opposed to a line cook that learned discipline there.
Like,
hey, you're 5 minutes late, you're fired. So now this guy is never late. And then hopefully just puts his head down and just keeps working and all that. And so, yeah. So what Scott and Chris were saying that they loved was that they had that
corporate structure.
Yeah. It's like
that structure and discipline. Stability, right?
Yeah.
Like there's,
yeah, the discipline is necessary, especially because this whole industry is super high volume. I mean, you don't get by on 50 covers a day. Like, you're getting by on 500 covers a day. Like, that's what you need, 500 people. Like, you can't do, like, a boutique version of an Arby's. Like, it has to have high velocity.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. They were selling 69-cent sandwiches when all the other people were selling a quarter sandwich burger. So.
I think how you can find success in that, though, is because some people would think that corporate world is so – it's overly structured – and it's like almost like marching orders. It's not. There is stability. There's a large realm of support system, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, I think what makes us successful, and I'll speak to at least in my own district, is like I still encourage innovation and creativity, right? Yeah. Yes, we're structured and there's parameters that we want to follow, but we can still think outside of the box to overcome obstacles and continue to innovate, right? And still market share. So if you can balance those in a structured corporate environment, I think you can find great success. And I think you can leverage people's talents from non-corporate environments and still bring them in comfortably, right?
Well, in the end, it's got to be about the people that work for you. I mean, it has to be about the people, because if you are, especially if you're like a senior, you know, VP, and let's just say you're a little older, you're like in your 60s or 70s, you may or may not, I don't mean to be an ageist, but you may be a little out of touch with what the cool kids are all about. But if you listen to some of your junior managers and your entry, even just your line cooks and your sales force, and they're like, you know, what's really, you know, TikTok's a thing right now. Wait, tell me more about that. It's like, well, this is a great vehicle to reach and market. And it's like, do you think that like some 70-year-old senior VP is going to independently figure out what TikTok is about? It's like, but the only way you see big corporate America finding these things out is by listening to their people.
Yeah.
And
embracing it.
And embracing it. Yeah. And like giving someone that is, you know, a junior member a place at the table and have a voice, so that you can – that those are the good businesses that understand that.
Absolutely. You remind me of an old adage that we've all heard. So there's no way you're going to say you haven't heard this, and I hope you're okay with a strong opinion on air. But and it's just how I lead, and it's how I've been successful and encourage others to do it. But there's that old adage of, you don't have to like me, you have to respect me, right?
Yeah.
And I couldn't disagree with that more, right? Like there's a level, and you just kind of reminded me about that with relatability. But there is a form of, whether it's the corporate world or anywhere else, of success of that, hey, I think you do have to like me, right? Like there's a level of likability that is extremely important, because I haven't really ever respected anyone I didn't like and never liked anybody I didn't respect, right? Like they don't go hand in hand that way. So
yeah, I think you respect people that you don't like in hindsight.
Yeah.
I think many times, that's a good point, right, when you move on and then you're whatever, like that's why I have so many old employees that have worked for me that in the moment they didn't like me, but then later on they tell
me a level of appreciation.
And you really helped me get through this and that. You know,
that's why we're friends.
So Matt does the show with me. I was Matt's boss for a short while of our lives.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
But it just reminded me,
we're done, can you make sure you take the trash out and turn the lights off?
When you were talking about the relatability of maybe an older VP or something, but that I think that is a correlation to the likability with that, right? It's easier to like someone that you can relate with, and I think you have to find avenues of that to leverage, you know, especially when you're managing 67 restaurants.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about it, man. Maybe you can feel like enlighten us or inspire us.
Sure.
But so I'm just thinking you're at an Arby's, and I'm taking like the glass half empty mentality here, but you're there and you're like, man, what's the difference of how I do my job? Like I have to do my job, clock in, but you took pride in your job and like worked your way up from the manager. And what I'm really getting at is that as a leader and now somebody, a leader in the company, how do you cultivate that in others? And how do you identify the people that, oh, I can get that out of her or him or.
Yeah. So I think it's fair to say that there may be a lot of team members that just think they don't know yet that they think that, hey, this is just what I'm supposed to do.
This is just a job. I get paid for it, so I'll just do it.
Yeah. It's it's $8, $9, $10, whatever it is an hour, and it's I'll do it. So there's some that are just like, hey, I'm just here doing it because I have to. And then there's some that just may believe that that's just kind of what they're destined for, right? So that's kind of what I try to take pride in, is just finding, encouraging those, right, that they can do more, they're capable of doing more. And when they identify with that, man, it's exciting, right? So
it's also a law of averages. This sounds shitty to say out loud, but not everyone has to buy into your system. You do need some people to just make the burgers, make the sandwiches, do whatever. And then of those, there are going to be some that want more. And then you're like, cool. If you're going to listen to those that ask the questions, you know, but if you just put your head down and you don't pipe up and do anything, that will be your only job and that will be your only position. So it kind of is on individuals at that point. I look at it.
And I'm not just going after to create, like, it's not so like scriptive that I'm not just trying to find someone that's a hard worker and going, hey, you can make a career in this. That's not what it's about. Like, I'm just genuinely trying to lead with sincerity, right? So if I can teach that person to take pride in what they do, be it here, be it somewhere else or at home, then you know, job well done, right? Yeah. And that's what's exciting. And you know, I kid you not, like my feet, when they hit the floor in the morning, not a day goes by when my feet hit the floor and I have to go to work that I'm not excited about it or excited to come here and talk about it, right? And how many people can, like, a lot of people don't say that.
And I know you, like, as a person outside of this, and like, you are, like, you're a guy that loves life. Like, that's a cliche thing to say, but like, you live it well. You've got a large friend circle. You have, obviously, you can't be around any of them right now, but but like, people like you. You're a nice person. But I think what's more attractive is that you enjoy yourself, and then that is something that kind of gives off. That's a charisma that you have. I got to know, though, at home when you're cooking, do you ever make roast beef?
No, and I don't do the cooking. I leave that up to my wife. She does phenomenal.
You don't do
with
a holiday roast beef?
No. I left all those cooking days back at Village Tavern. So, that is not my deal. But
well, before you get out of here, before we're done with the show, we did want to give you a little bit of a gift. We have something here in front of you. It is a Boss Coffee. It's flash brewed coffee. Boss Coffee comes from Japan, which I think there might be an Arby's in Japan. There might be a couple of Arby's, maybe even a Buffalo Wild Wings or something. That's all, you know, close to the border of North Carolina.
Very close, relatively. What's cool is Boss Coffee, it's flash brewed, meaning it's brewed hot and then chilled fast for original flavor and texture.
They flash brew their beans to unlock rich aromas before quickly cooling to lock them in. And so what you get is this creamy, smooth, rich Boss Coffee.
Yeah, and they have three different flavors. They have the traditional black coffee, they have vanilla and cafe au lait.
Boss Coffee is the most popular canned coffee drink across Asia, Australia, and New Zealand.
And so when you're shopping for it on Amazon, you get 10% off when you use the NCFB podcast code. So again, we're helping you out to get yourself a little bit of coffee. With that coffee, maybe you want to get a little ice cream, maybe a little bit of alcohol at the end of the night when those feet are not touching the ground anymore. You got them up on the ottoman and you just want to scoop out a little bourbon and caramel together. I'm talking about proof alcohol ice cream, which allows you to think differently about your dessert. And all proof alcohol ice cream coming from South Carolina is made with 7% alcohol or 7% ABV in every pint of ice cream. You will go home with that as well today because you are a guest on our show. And maybe a smart cap. I noticed, Matt, you're wearing the exclusive beanie, which is not for sale. No one gets those.
No.
They're only for you, me, and my daughter, Charlotte. That's it. And I think Cam has one.
Yes.
But you, the listener, can get one of our hats, which are pretty awesome. I think they're pretty sweet. Designed by the folks over at MRC, our friends over there. And you can shop for it on our website. So go to ncfbpodcast.com, and you can buy a hat there.
Yeah.
So, Brandon, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's cool to kind of peel back part of the industry that we don't understand or don't know, or at least think we know. But when you start looking at it from the outside looking in, you realize, well, this is a business just like any, and it's in the food business. You are providing jobs. You're providing sustenance. You're doing that all. So it is cool to hear the stories, and we appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you for being a beacon, an example of people who might be out there and struggling and be like, why am I doing this? But you're a great example of somebody who took real pride in their work and didn't matter necessarily what the stigma was, but rose through the ranks anyway.
I'll tell you, if you don't mind, one last little plug here. Just kind of lead with a mission statement of, you know, anyone that comes into our team, especially at the management level, my expectations is that they create and maintain an environment that is conducive to their own loved ones or children working in. And that means a lot. And that's important because everyone in there is someone's loved one or child and should enjoy work and be successful at it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, everybody, go to Arby's. They got the meats. You will eat and drink merrily.
Thanks for listening to the NCFB podcast. And if you've stuck with us this long, review us on iTunes and remember, 5 stars are encouraged.